Green Rush, mining the energy revolution with Matt Watson.
Hello, and welcome to Green Rush, mining the energy revolution. I'm your host, Matt Watson. We have a special guest today, and joining us is Mr. Phillips S. Baker, Jr. He's the president and the CEO of Hecla Mining Company, which just happens to be the largest silver mining outfit in North America. He's also the chairman of the Silver Institute. Phil, welcome to the program.
Matt, glad to be on.
So I've been looking forward to having this conversation. Lots of dialogue about where the price of silver is going and just what are the demands for solar really going to look like. And I think there's some data I want to present and pick your brain along the way, if you don't mind, Phil. So I wanted to pull up just the silver. If you take your Silver Institute World Service Silver Survey and you plot basically the industrial demand segments, you see an outlook that looks like this. I've increased the 23 outlook for solar here just because it was such a fantastic year for building out solar and a lot more on that to come. But one of the points I always try to stress to everybody is this metal is becoming more of an industrial metal. I'm not showing jewelry. I'm not showing physical investment volumes. But increasingly, this is becoming an electrical and an industrial commodity. Wouldn't you agree, Phil?
Absolutely. The silver has changed dramatically, over the last few years. And that's been in a context of it changing a lot over the last 100 years.
Right. One of the points I also try to stress to everybody to make sure they know the engineering aspects of this, silver is the most conductive material on the periodic table, followed closely by copper. And so copper and silver play a very much an electrification role. And so as we talk about all these initiatives to electrify everything, you're pulling more silver and more copper along for the ride automatically. And in my worldview, there's almost no avoiding this electrification of everything. That's occurring whether we like it or not. And of course we like it. Now I've got my own models and I run these models out to 2050. Here I have added in the net physical investment and the jewelry component. There's a big question: what's the outlook for mining going forward? You'll see I have two dash lines on there. The black line is the mined volume. The red line is the mine plus recycle. Phil, I got to tell you, I am worried when I look at silver as a commodity. I do get worried about our silver recycling. We're below 50% of the silver gets recovered. Whereas I think you look at gold and electronics, a much higher rate of capture for gold and for other metals. And simply put, too much of the silver is getting downstream in a one-way ticket to landfill. And that's a concern for me. I don't know. What are your thoughts on that long term?
Well, it's really a function of the price of silver. Higher price and you'll see more of it recycled. It is silver because of its price is not the driver of the recycling. It's really all about the gold, and silver just comes along for the ride.
Right. And so I do spend a lot of times in precious metals forums. I do talk about the silver recovery. And recycling solar panels is going to be a hugely important topic, I think, coming forward. But when you look at this chart, you can see 2023, we had a huge year for solar PV. There's a big uptake, a big tick up, and I think the projection is that's going to hold, and we'll talk more about solar a little bit later. And then we've got more metal, silver metal, going into automotive, whether it be BEVs or hybrids. Both those configurations pull more than the average ICE conventional gasoline vehicle. So really, I think two of the bigger growth segments are automotive and solar PV, for sure.
So an interesting comment about autos and the use of silver. Just so happens my son is in the automotive industry and I won't say who he's with or any of those details, but I talked to him about silver use in automobiles and in batteries, and he says that it's so small from the car manufacturer standpoint that it's really insignificant. So the fact that it is growing and has grown dramatically, they don't mind that. It's not relevant to their overall cost.
I think you're right. I think a troy ounce of silver, frankly, buried in a $45,000 vehicle is negligible to them. It's, you know, certainly they aren't tracking
it's every gram. It is what silver is able to do is right. really, that's the important thing.
Agreed. So I could show a couple different models on what this downstream outlook looks like, but, you know, in every scenario, even if we somehow can get the mining to increase over time, which is a question mark there, you know, some, what, 70% of the silver mining is a byproduct type of mining, where silver isn't the direct ore
right.
you're after. You pick up copper or other materials along the way. But even with an upward trajectory, I just don't see any scenario where the markets hold. We're going to be, I think, entering a state of, structural deficits going forward.
We actually have been. We've been in deficit for the last 2-3 years now.
Right.
I would anticipate that's not going to change, probably for the next decade.
Right.
And because if you think about how long it takes to discover a deposit and then put it into production, the average today is right at 17 years from right. from discovery to production. So there has and not been the exploration.
That's even right, for right, open for pit
all
mine, correct?
All types of mines. And if you think about the exploration that's happened for silver over the last 30 years, it's been almost non-existent. It has really been underinvested in, and the only way that you're going to see, further investment in silver exploration is really higher silver prices. And that's what this structural deficit's going to create. So yes, we will eventually produce more, but it will right. take a couple of decades. So in the meantime, it comes from above ground stocks. It comes from silver that's holed away and people finally see a price where they're willing to let go of it.
Right. Well, that's a perfect segue. Let's talk a little bit about those USGS known reserves. So here's a plot where I show historical, and you can dig into the history from the USGS. And back in 1950, this was their stated known reserves. Well, it's grown since then, but to your point, we've kind of become flat here since the year 2005, where it's just a couple decades, it's just kind of going laterally. So we got some 16 billion troy ounces in our global known reserves, and another 29 billion beyond that in what they call inferred and indicated resources. That's, in my mind, we're looking at about 40 years worth of material here is all. And to your point, with the mining timeline being on average 17 years and growing, boy, this is going to be hard to catch up to this demand. And I can see it's burning down our reserves very rapidly here. Stressing the need, I think we got to potentially be talking more about recycle even now, anticipating that this is coming, got to be looking at even recycle to help augment the supply as well.
Well, you certainly can do that, but it is not going to make a material difference. Silver just doesn't drive that recycling. You do need more production. The issue with getting more production is really the permitting process is the infrastructure that you need to build. I mean, with the rate at which the mines are mining, it's about 800 million ounces a year.
Right.
And to see that materially increase takes a substantial amount of investment. These mines are sort of sized at this rate, because of the nature of the ore bodies. I think about our own mines, and it would take a large investment. In some cases, because they're underground mines, it might even be impossible to get a material increase in the throughput of these mines in order to meet the coming demand requirements.
Okay, fantastic. Well, let's see if we can get you to talk a little bit about the price outlook. So here's the price going back to the year 2000. It's been growing. When I calculated, something about an 8% CAGR rate year over year. Lots of discussion. It's funny, if you listen to the analysts today, you do have a number of people calling for, $50 to $100 a troy ounce silver in relatively short order. And I struggle with that premise that it could jump that high that quickly, although we've seen it occur before, but that was a very special circumstance back in the 2010-11 timeframe. your thoughts. Do you see the silver price being capable of jumping above 50, let's say, by the year 2030?
Look, I just happened to start with Hecla in 2001, and the silver price was actually hit the 35-year low of $4.10 the month I became president of the company. Right. And so you think about where the price is today, we're six times that number. Did anyone think that the price of silver would be six times what it was in 2001? No, no one thought that. What drove it? You had industrial demand, but a large component of it was the demand for silver for monetary reasons, for people looking at it as a store of value. And you saw that increase. You saw the increase industrially. You saw the increase in the monetary. And at the same time, you saw photographic demand go to almost zero.
Right.
So where are we today? Today, we're in an environment where that monetary demand is continuing. The industrial demand, you made the comment earlier, industrial demand is this is becoming more of an industrial metal. That has grown, and the amount of photovoltaic demand that we've had is exponential. If you look at the curve for the growth in the gigawatts installed, so I look at it and I think, yeah, it's certainly possible over the course of the next 20 years to see the silver price four times what it is today. So could it be $100? Yeah. Do I think it's going to happen tomorrow? No, I don't. But I do think you have with the structural deficit, you have the potential over time to see significantly higher prices.
Oh, I agree. And I don't disagree with $200 silver down in the 2040s, later in that decade, I think you could certainly see $200 silver, but it's going to take a while to get there. I just don't see big steps happening.
Well, I think you will see some spikes, just like you saw a spike in the 2010-11 timeframe. I think you'll see some spikes along the way. But, from our perspective, we're a 100-year-old company. We look at things in terms of decades. So from my perspective, I think over the course of the coming decades, we'll have some spikes. The downside is seeing the silver price fall below sort of $20 for any material period of time is almost impossible to see happen for, again, a material period of time, a couple of year period of time. So the upward trajectory is very, very powerful here. And I don't see that changing.
I agree. I absolutely agree. Well, let's move through some solar PV topics real quickly, maybe I could add a little bit of a color here. It's clearly the demand for solar PV and the silver that goes along for the ride is growing. I do think we're going to hit our solar demand kind of peak within the next decade. It's really going to become a question of how much solar do we need, and I think we're on a trajectory where, if we just continued this build out year over year through 2050, you'd get to the levels they want us at. But really the question is, what is that final level that they want us at? Is it 14 terawatts? Is it 28 terawatts type of range? IRENA back in their 2021 roadmaps called out 14 terawatts as a global operational target for 2050. And like we talked about, silver and copper, they both have these constraints with deposits and how much is available and how quickly we could develop them. The thing that also scares me, Phil, in all of these green energy topics is the cost. Solar's been sold as this almost free energy source, and yet I think the data supports a different conclusion. I think the prices where they've seen higher rates of installation have seen their electricity grid prices climb much faster than other regions of the globe, and that includes California, for example. I get really frustrated just to rant on I've built a solar factory. I was in the solar industry for some 2 years. I always get floored. People talk about the cost per watt for panels versus look at what the utility scale fully installed prices are according to NREL in North America. And yet the residential installations are about three times higher than the utility scale installations. Why are we even doing residential? Why don't we just do more utility scale? Let's make it as cheap as possible. It's a third of the price installed. Why not? And I don't think there's enough of that sort of thought in this managing this green energy transition on this particular topic as there should be. And it just floors me how people kind of misrepresent what the cost of solar really are. I think it's a bit more than stated. But with that said,
the utilities though are very engaged on growing their you know utility scaled solar and moving away from residential. They clearly are on that path.
Right. No, and you get into all sorts of topics of base load versus variable renewables and the implications at meeting peak and the need for storage, and there's even implications to PGMs and the hydrogen economy. I think that this gets us into where it's going to put a hook into the need for the PGMs more than people realize, just because we've installed so much variable renewables that you're not going to be able to meet your peak demands the way people think without a good storage system. But we're at a point now where solar, clearly out of all the different components of kind of the clean energy transition, is the hottest topic. And now we're getting to a point where we get different views from industry analysts like Wood Mackenzie and Bloomberg. Wood Mackenzie has an outlook where here we are in 2023. That was their outlook for how much we built out, the huge jump from the previous 2022. But then basically they have us going a little bit flat here for the next decade, about a 1% CAGR. Bloomberg has it a little bit steeper. They have us climbing at an 8.5% CAGR. And I've wrapped kind of a base case and a high case around these two scenarios just to show people what it looks like. We know in the background, for those of you who don't know, there's design thrifting that goes on with the module manufacturers where they're trimming the silver used. They'll displace and do tin alloys or some other conductive copper material type as an alloy to help reduce silver loadings. But there's all sorts of different efforts. But on average, we've been averaging about 5% year over year reduction through design thrifting and grams per watt. And there's some new technologies that are coming that have higher loadings. I do track all that, but I just think it's interesting. How much do we really need? And long setup here, but that case that we were talking about where you basically go flat on installations versus you continue to ramp, whether we hit the 14 terawatts that IRENA wants us to hit by 2050, or maybe even double that, 28 terawatts, where you'd have about 65% of the global grid be driven by solar PV. You're combating a growth versus a design thrifting CAGR. It's a kind of a competition between two CAGRs. And the outlook I'm trying to sell you on here, Phil, is what does that do to silver demand? Well, so we're here. I think we did somewhere around 260 to 280 million ounces of silver demand in 2023 for solar PV. It's going to climb a little bit further, but if you have that flat trajectory, the design thrifting will help lower the aggregate new demand year over year. The case where we had a faster growth rate, I think you're going to hold somewhere in the 300 million range for a longer period of time year over year in terms of solar PV demand. But I think the message we got to get through to all the analysts, Phil, is that there is a cap. How much solar do we need? There is a finite amount. you can easily overbuild this if we don't watch out, is really one of my messages.
Well, I'm struck by the amount of additional silver these new applications have, and right. So I think the thrifting is not nearly as high given the new technologies as what you're showing here.
Yeah.
And so I think you'll see a continued increase in the amount of silver demand. But even if you don't, you know, to have the demand for silver for solar be over 300 million ounces a year is a huge component of total demand.
That works out to about 32% of the global silver supply, right? At these rates, so that's a big piece.
Well,
of the
you
pie
think about you think about that. You're getting close to half of the silver that's mined.
Right.
Yeah, you're not quite there, but you're getting close to it.
Yeah. And again, that recycle component through e-waste and other streams are so important to help meet that demand. No, I agree, Phil. I think these numbers are getting startling. I think even this year, 2023 was bigger than advertised. I know the Silver Institute, you're going through a refresh on your publications, and I think they're going to increase it based on the known build-out now. That was such a great year. But I do see the growth rate potentially slowing down, so I wouldn't be surprised that we get to a point where it can roll over some, like we show here. But even if
can
we
I,
don't,
can I can I just tell you, Matt, that Matt, everybody that has said that has been wrong.
Yeah.
Everybody who has said we're reaching a peak has been wrong. It's continued to grow. So good luck, but I.
All right. Yep. Point well taken. I just wanted to present this concept again. There is going to be a cap to how much we're going to really need. Automotive, you know, it gets some play, but you know, the loadings, we're electrifying these vehicles more and more every year. But when you jump to hybrids and BEVs, the rate of loadings increases, you know, by a factor of two when you get to BEVs. And so your mix of powertrain is going to play a role in how the silver, you know, demand grows for the automotive sector. But what if in addition to that $300 million for solar, you got another $200 million in change for automotive? Yeah, you're going to have a lot of silver tied up in those two alone. So certainly something to watch for here as well. Wouldn't you agree?
Absolutely.
I was going to go into a little bit on the semiconductor side and where all the silver is going. It's stunning how much die attach material and silver bonding wires, you know, silver showing up in some of this advanced packaging and in semiconductor and increasing rates. I just don't see any downside. It's you know, it's so fundamentally, it's such an important conductive material. There's really not good workarounds for this other than copper, and copper is going to have, I think, even a bigger strain on from a mining perspective than even silver. I can't see any scenario where this is going to drop. The demands seem to be built in, as far as I could tell.
I agree.
So with that, I think we will call it a wrap for today. I want to thank you, Phil, for your time and your thoughts. Any closing thoughts you want to share with us on your outlook for the market?
Yeah, I'll just comment on the Silver Institute. You know, I am chairman of the Institute, and we will put out the Silver Survey for 2023. It'll be the 24 report that covers 2023. That will come out middle of April. Yeah. And so, you know, stay tuned for that. It will, we'll have it all updated, and then we'll Metals Focus will also provide a forecast for what they see in 2024. You know, one of the things I'm struck by is the loading, or the number of gigawatts of solar that was supposed to be installed in 23. We're finding it's a lot more than anyone anticipated, and as a result, there's a lot more silver that has been consumed. And as one David Baker of Baker Steel has said, photovoltaics are the central bank of silver. You know how central banks are buying gold? Well, the photovoltaics are buying silver. And interestingly enough, it's a very similar percentage. And so you have this base of demand that is going to continue to push the silver price.
Right. All right. Well, fantastic.
So thanks for having me on.
Thank you so much for your time. Next week, you can stay tuned. We're going to have a session, Mining Timelines and ESG, or Environmental and Social Governance. How do we scale responsibly mine critical minerals? We're going to have two guests. We're going to have James Gavilan from Gavilan Commodities, and we're going to have Lyle Trenton from Trenton Consulting Services, great ESG expertise. And we'll talk a little bit about some of the battery metals in particular, and maybe rare earths as well. So join us next week. Again, this is Matt Watson with Green Rush, Mining the Energy Revolution. We'll see you again. Thank you.
Green Rush, Mining the Energy Revolution with Matt Watson.